Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
To the world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
It's a power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
This is the greatest show.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning, Valley sports fans. Happy Tuesday to everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jarrett Carlin, and Sarah Cazell back for 4 hours of sports entertainment. And here is what I thought last night before turning the lights out on a Monday night. The NFL is off to a wicked, amazing start.
You cannot deny this. It was a good week one.
And it just, I don't even know what I mean by that, other than just so many games felt big and big performances. And it's just a reminder that this sport just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, the Thursday night ratings for the opener were at a 5-year high for the Tampa Bay Dallas game. Not surprising. You got Tom Brady and America's team. But when you get an opportunity like they had last night with one game left on the schedule, and, you know, they're opening up basically a new stadium for the fans in Las Vegas. Uh-huh. And you get a game like that.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good night for the NFL.
It really was. And it was just a zany ending to that game. And
that was zany.
It really bizarre ending. You sit back and you're like, wow, that opening night game felt momentous.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals felt momentous. The Browns Chiefs felt gigantic.
Do you think that the full stadiums, you think that's a big part of
it?
Yeah,
it's probably a lot to do with it.
Absolutely.
That's probably, it's probably more to do with it than we even realize, because fans came back during NBA season, during the NBA playoffs, but that's different than watching fans in football games.
Mm-hmm.
And what that all means. You know what I mean?
You know what's weird about where we are in sports and attendance and everything? Major League Baseball broadcasters still aren't traveling. The Diamondbacks game was on last night, getting ready for the game, and then they got, you know, Steve Berthiaume and Bob Brenly still at Chase Field, and in the background you could see a bunch of tables on the infield. Like, they're still not traveling.
That's a good point.
Like,
that's kind of odd.
Yeah. I guess they're not going to do it this year. I guess they're going to wait till April. I don't know.
Baseball. Speaking of baseball.
Baseball, Ray.
The Giants clinched a playoff berth. Who saw that coming? Start the show, Jarrett.
I definitely saw it yesterday.
Yeah, you did.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash. Brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Yeah, we start the Splash for Tuesday, September 14th. The Cardinals still basking in the glow of their dominant 38-13 win over the Tennessee Titans in week one of the NFL season. Look for them to be a riser in various NFL power rankings from around the country released today. Head coach Cliff Kingsbury spoke to the media yesterday, said that starting right tackle Calvin Beecham is day-to-day with an injury to his ribs. Beecham left the game Sunday, played on only 41 of the team's 69 offensive snaps before being replaced by Justin Murray. So, not horrible news on Calvin Beecham. You'll take that day-to-day terminology.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought the offensive line held up pretty well after he left the game.
Yeah, I thought the offensive line was pretty good almost the entire day. In fact, there were people who pointed out that a couple of times when Kyler Murray left the pocket, he didn't even need to.
Yeah.
That's how good the pocket was.
The first touchdown throw to DeAndre Hopkins was spectacular, but it was also a pretty clean pocket.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Crazy Monday Night Football game to cap off week one in Las Vegas. The Raiders came back to tie their game with the Ravens three times in the final 9-18 of the fourth quarter alone to force overtime. On third down and goal from the Baltimore 5-yard line in overtime, Derek Carr had a pass deflected and intercepted by Ravens cornerback Anthony Averett. Baltimore then needed only a field goal to win. They would turn the ball back over themselves, Carl Nassib stripping Lamar Jackson, giving Vegas the ball back at the 27. And then two plays later, an all-out blitz led to a 27-yard touchdown pass from Derek Carr to Zay Jones and the Raiders.
After a delay of game penalty when the Raiders couldn't find their field goal kicker.
Yeah, they're trying to kick a field goal on second down. And they could not find Carlson, so they had to take the delay of game and run a play from scrimmage.
Our buddy Frank Caliendo, you've got to download that sound, Jared. He did a classic Gruden, and he also did a classic Summerall Madden about the cat falling from the top of the football stadium.
There was a little bit of reaction yesterday, at least that I heard, that when a couple of shots of Gruden on the sidelines, they're like, wow, Gruden's put on a couple LBs.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's...
No, that was Caliendo they were showing.
Spider Y2 chocolate covered banana.
That's good.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
Banana split is what it is.
That's even better.
That's good.
The Washington football team put quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick on IR with a hip injury suffered in Sunday's loss to the Chargers. He'll remain on IR for at least 3 weeks, although Adam Schefter of ESPN cited sources that indicate it could be a 6 to 8 week absence. Say hello to Taylor Heinicke as your starting quarterback for the WFT.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting that Ron Rivera doesn't want any part of Cam Newton?
Don't you? That is interesting.
It is. I mean, they had their glory years together, basically. Uh-huh. I don't know if the WFT can handle all that aura.
That's really actually a good point. Cam Newton is so extra in everything he does that football, and he's unvaccinated. That extra plus unvaccinated plus, equals I unemployed mean, in the NFL.
And at the heart of it, not very good at football anymore. Right. And that might be the biggest determining factor.
Plus, Heinicke was actually good in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and that loss.
For a moment. You think about that game. That was against Tampa, right?
Yes, that was the first.
There was a
game.
Moment when it looked like Washington's football team might upset Tampa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the kick away happened.
That's right. Well, that, yeah.
And the moment ended.
Injuries biting the 49ers again. Running back Raheem Mostert on IR for at least 8 weeks with a knee cartilage injury. Cornerback Jason Verrett, torn ACL. He's out for the remainder of the season. In baseball, Clayton Kershaw was back on the mound for the Dodgers for the first time since July 3rd. The lefty went 4 1/3 innings, striking out 5 D-backs and helping the Dodgers to a 5-1 win over Arizona. Arizona had the 1-0 lead in the first RBI single by Josh Rojas, but they'd manage only 4 hits the rest of the way, including 2 infield singles. Zach Gallen took the loss for the D-backs. He is now 2-10 on the season. Diamondbacks are a woeful 2-12 against the Dodgers in 2021. Same two teams tonight, Luke Weaver facing Tony Gonsolin, 7:10 first pitch, 6:30 pregame here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It just can't end soon enough.
No, yeah.
And unfortunately, there's 5 games remaining for the D-backs with the Dodgers. They could end up 2-17 against them.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Yeah, that's outstanding, isn't it?
As a big
What did the Orioles do last night, Vinny?
Probably sucked.
I mean, by 18 or more runs, because they've been on a good run of that.
The Orioles last night had the night off.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think they're still a half game ahead.
Okay.
Or behind, or however you want to phrase it. As you mentioned, the Giants, they pounded San Diego 9-1. They became the first team in 2021 to clinch a playoff spot, their first since 2016. Yeah, at the beginning of the year, I don't think many people were picking the Giants to be a playoff team, and here they are, the first team in.
Yeah, that is just crazy. What a year they have had. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody kept waiting for that team to fall, to break apart a little, and it never happened.
No, and they're on a 8-game winning streak right now. Arizona head coach Jed Fish making a change at quarterback for the Wildcats Week 3 game against NAU. Gunnar Cruz to the bench, Will Plummer. The freshman from Gilbert High School will get the start on Saturday night. Much to the delight of USC fans everywhere, head football coach Clay Helton has finally been fired just 2 games into his 7th season on the job. He finishes with a 46-24 record, 1 conference championship. That was back in 2017. 21 of those 46 wins came in 2016 and 2017 when they had Sam Darnold. But he was just 25-18 with other quarterbacks at the helm.
Yeah.
They got embarrassed by Stanford at home Saturday, leading to the change. Dante Williams, the associate head coach, is the the new man
this
on the sideline.
This is a bad day for ASU. First of all, second of all, I'm really amazed that USC stuck with Clay Helton as long as they did. Third of all, what a short leash going into the season. Basically, you lose a game that you're not supposed to, you're done.
Well, we didn't. I wanted to bring it up in hardware yesterday. Did you see the way that game against Stanford began?
I did not.
USC kicked off, and their kicker, Parker Lewis, who, by the way, was from the old TV show in the 90s.
Of the Valley.
Yes. He got ejected for targeting, trying to make a tackle on the kick return.
I know, man. That is excellent.
Talk about a harbinger
of things.
Did
that really happen?
That really happened. Yes. Yeah.
I told you, this targeting rule in college football, it is for the birds.
Placed by his backup, Doogie Howser.
Where did Parker Lewis go to school?
Saguaro, I believe.
Okay. Well, they always say Parker Lewis can't lose. Mm-hmm. That is a really dated joke.
You and I are.
And on that dated joke, we end today's Splash for Tuesday, September 14th. Coming up next, Cardinals. Not totally on top of the world, but they're moving in that direction. We'll tell you what the head coach, Cliff Kingsbury, had to say yesterday following their season-opening win over the Titans. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata, mornings on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
We just see it as a starting point. We got a long way to go. You watch the film, there's a ton of corrections to be made, but the effort was really good. But the passion we played with was really good, and the poise for most of the game, which are things we emphasize going into it.
Head coach Cliff Kingsbury of the Arizona Cardinals on with Wolf and Luke yesterday as they broadcasted live from the Dignity Health Arizona Cardinals Training Center. Week one win for the Cardinals, one of the more decisive one-sided wins in the league. Certainly not the most one-sided win in the league, but when you consider, you know, what was at stake, the, you know, the previews of those games and what was expected of the Tennessee Titans this season and still could be, that was a good old-fashioned butt-whooping that the Cardinals put on there. Now, I do think, and I don't say this to diminish what the Cardinals did because they played a complete game. They overcame some early sloppiness to dominate that game. Tennessee looked ill-prepared to play football.
I totally agree.
Totally ill-prepared.
Totally
that was a team that didn't play any of their starters in the preseason. They were trying to work in some new pieces offensively. They did have a quarterback in Ryan Tannehill who missed some lead-up to that game, being on the COVID-19 reserve list. So I think they got caught by a bunch of things, and they never really adjusted in that game. Again, credit to the Cardinals. They didn't allow those adjustments to be made, but Mike Vrabel was basically scratching his head by the end of that game.
This is a testament to the Cardinals and really honestly to Steve Keim and the philosophy that the Cardinals needed to get more physical in this coming football season, because I believe the Tennessee Titans saw the Cardinals in week one and didn't feel any fear at all, at least from a physicality standpoint. And I really think they were stunned that they couldn't push that team around on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really helped explain why the game went the way the game did, why the Titans got so desperate early on with the trick play that I couldn't believe they were doing it at the time. And I just think it was the fact that the Cardinals answered a bell physically that the Titans did not think Arizona was capable of doing. And that's a credit to the Cardinals, to the new approach. And you know, I think Tennessee's a good team. I think they really thought they were going to get pretty boy football from the Cardinals, and they didn't.
No, they didn't. They got a more physical team, but again, the lack of adjustments that were made or not made in that game by Tennessee. This is from The Ringer. Stephen Ruiz, who now writes for The Ringer, really put the blame on the offensive line and the offensive coordinator of the Titans. And I went back and I watched the game yesterday, pick after the show, and the first sack by Chandler Jones, he went completely unblocked. There was very little in terms of double teaming Chandler Jones, even though it was pretty clear he was going to dominate any single tackle because he did it to Lamb and he did it to Lawan. Whoever was lining up in front of him was just mincemeat. Ruiz writes, the offensive line was mostly to blame for the poor showing. Tannehill was sacked 6 times with Jones picking up 5 of them, including a strip sack that set up the game's first touchdown. He mentioned Taylor Lewan going to Twitter and thanking Jones for exposing him. He said some of the blame for Lawan's rough day should fall on first-year offensive coordinator Todd Downing. The Titans' left tackle stunk it up, but it was clear from the outset he wasn't capable of blocking Jones on his own. So what did Downing do? Nothing at all. He offered Lawan no help, and Jones capitalized. Downing also seemed to forget how integral play action had been to Tennessee's past offensive success. Tannehill was first among starters in play action usage last year with a 36.4% rate per football focus. Pro Football Focus. Against the Cardinals, he used play action on just 7.3% of his dropbacks, according to Next Gen Stats. That's Tannehill's lowest single game rate in the Next Gen database, which dates back to 2016. Tennessee didn't call a single play action pass in the second half.
Yeah, as that game went on, they started showing him, and you know this from watching it, they started showing him on the sidelines more and more, and he looked like he was swimming.
Oh, yeah.
I'll bet you inside the building, he's a real concern right now because they were slow to even begin to utilize Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. They didn't seem to, they didn't adjust at all to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't surprise me that they didn't engage any play action. It was just, again, I think they just operated on the assumption that Derrick Henry was going to push the Cardinals backwards.
And he didn't.
And he didn't.
I looked at his carries, 17 carries for 58 yards. 49 of the 58 carries came after the Cardinals were up 31-13.
Yeah.
It was third quarter garbage time, basically, which you don't see. Before that, I mean, he had 9 yards. In the first quarter, he had 3 runs of minus yards. They set the tone early. In the second quarter, 3 carries for 2 yards. So when you hold Derrick Henry to 58 yards, that's a badge of honor.
Yeah.
But it's a fraudulent 58 yards.
Oh, well, totally. Yeah. I mean, it's those numbers could have been even more of a feather in the Cardinals' cap.
Yes.
Here's the number that mattered. At the time the Cardinals distanced themselves from the game, from the Titans, Derrick Henry had 8 yards in his first 9 carries.
Mm-hmm.
That's doing a job. And like I said, early in the game, the ability of the Cardinals defense to produce disruptive negative yardage plays for the Titans on first down completely blew up their game plan. This is not a team that does well in second and longs, and the Cardinals did it consistently. Chandler Jones did it a couple of times. J.J. Watt did it a couple of times. It was, man, I tell you what, they're going to get a similar team in the Vikings. But the Vikings are better defensively than Tennessee. But this bodes well for them. If they were able to handle Derrick Henry in that running game, you know, it bodes well for Dalvin Cook and the Vikings, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And Dalvin Cook in that Vikings running game did not have a very productive day against Cincinnati in that loss either.
No.
Cliff Kingsbury, in that interview with Wolf and Luke, he talked about the game plan that Vance Joseph came up with.
It was incredible, the game plan he came up with, and I made mention of it yesterday, but all summer I'd walk into his office and he's watching the Titans. You know, I think he watched 2 or 3 years worth of film on them, and it paid off. He had a tremendous plan that they executed flawlessly and really gave us an opportunity to win that game.
Yeah, and we talked about Vance Joseph's performance and how it was carried out by the players on the mm-hmm. team. I mean, the defensive line dominated. This from Cliff Kingsbury's press conference yesterday.
He did, and he makes an impact on and off the field. He's such a great presence in that room, such a great leader. He and Rashard are a great combination there at that nose together, and I thought he had some real impactful plays. And that group's playing at a high level. Coach Buck has got them rocking and rolling and haven't skipped a beat. Even, you know, not having Jordan Phillips in, who's one of the key contributors, that group is really, really stepped up to the challenge.
Yeah, for the first offering from that group, especially when during the preseason games, the Cardinals, I think on one day or over 2 days, had to sign mm-hmm. 5 defensive linemen just to fill uniforms to play. That was a really good performance. Corey Peters, you know, we went through yesterday's show, a couple of unsung heroes that I don't think got enough of a play, and Corey Peters was one of them, playing in his first game after that knee injury. He didn't play in the preseason. As he was playing himself back into shape, he was fantastic. And on the offensive side of the ball, Chase Edmonds had a very, very, it wasn't a dominating performance, but he was productive. When you have 106 yards from scrimmage like he did,
I didn't even know that.
And over 60 wow. yards rushing, five okay. yards a pop in, yeah. on the ground. He played really well.
Yeah, and listen, I thought James Conner, the fact that James Conner was the guy delivering stiff arms and not Derrick Henry was a tribute to the physicality the Cardinals showed in this game. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way. So I was really impressed with that. And as you pointed out a couple of different ways here, the fact that they were able to do some things in the running game after Kyler Murray started making pass after pass after pass, Kyler Murray just kind of tilted the game mm-hmm. in the Cardinals' direction, and everything began to kind of work after that. As it relates to Vance Joseph, here's my thought on that. A lot of times when you get great defenses, you find great defenses that have great relationships with their defensive coordinator. Buddy Ryan in the Bears, Robert Saleh in the 49ers. Mm-hmm. You could probably go down the list with this stuff. And I wonder if Vance Joseph over the course of time is going to kind of, if he's going to elevate with this defense. Because last year, we went into last year, I think for the most part, the consensus in the Valley was he was on a hot seat. Right?
Going in, yeah.
There weren't people who were really too enamored with Vance Joseph after year one. He did a great job under trying circumstances last year. Now he's got real talent. Some real good acquisitions to mm-hmm. work with. And so I'm really curious to see where this goes. I'm really curious to see if, I mean, not to get too crazy optimistic here, but who's going to be more dominant on this football team? Long run, their defense or their offense? If we have that conversation, we've got a good football team.
That was the first time in the history of the NFL that there was a player who had five sacks in the same game where an offensive player was responsible for five touchdowns.
See, that's
two levels of domination right there.
Yeah, that's getting it done.
Text Red C right now to 620-620. Listen for your name at 735, 135, and 335, and you could win a pair of tickets to the Arizona Cardinals home opener this Sunday. Plus, one grand prize winner will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey courtesy of Pristine Auction. Once again, that's Red Sea to 620-620. Week one was entertaining, and it was capped off by a wild one in Las Vegas. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata mornings here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Is to his left, and Zay Jones.
Here they come.
And here they come.
Blitz is picked up. Jones is open. Jackpot, baby! Vegas touchdown. This time, no doubt. Put it in the W column, baby. This one's over.
Brent Musburger on KRLV Radio. Yeah. Brent Musburger doing Las Vegas Raiders play-by-play on their radio network.
The legalization of sports gambling must have made he must be the happiest dude in the world.
No, he cashed in on it years ago.
Yeah, yeah. You remember just what how silly that used to be? Just a little nod and a wink to the line. Oh. And then Al Michaels took it from there.
Do you remember the reaction when Brent Musburger left ESPN to go with VSIN to go live in Vegas and have this whole sports gambling network?
Yeah.
People thought he was nuts.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, ahead of his time to move to Las Vegas before they got an NFL team. And now he's got an NFL play-by-play job.
Yeah. Look at that.
Wow.
Brent Musburger.
That's pretty
visionary.
Good.
You are looking live.
I once saw him. I once saw him at the MGM buffet, packing in a full plate of.
Did he stir the soup?
I didn't see him buy the soup because that would absolutely have. I would have judged him for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I believe it's a buffet, Jarrett, not a buffet.
So this was an interesting win by the Raiders last night because the Raiders they've kind of been in a weird spot. This is what, year four of John Gruden? Is that right?
Sounds right.
10-year contract. When they signed him, it was like, wow, you got Gruden out of the television booth. And it's kind of been some mixed results. They've had moments. They've had stretches of good play. They've had moments when they've seemed to fall out of love with Derek Carr. They've flirted with Russell Wilson. They've made more zany roster moves. They lost Rodney Hudson to the Cardinals. And last night, that football team kept fighting, even though there was a time when it looked like the Ravens were going to blow the Raiders out. And it parlayed into one of the wackier endings you'll ever see.
Oh, it was nuts. Here was John Gruden.
I did know that they're great competitive players. I mean, they love football. They play for each other.
And I think the fans witnessed that tonight. We got a lot of young guys that really stepped up. But I'm really proud of the character they showed. We were down 14-0 to the Ravens. And it didn't look pretty. It didn't look good. But when you can come back and find a way to win against a team like that, that's saying something. That's an impressive victory. And like they say here, just win, baby.
And they did. And here's what John Gruden felt like during the game.
I felt like I died and woke up and died again. And I was like a cat. I had multiple lives tonight. I don't like playing like that. It was tough. But, again, we did a lot of really good things to win that football game tonight.
Yeah, it was in terms of intrigue and excitement at the end of that game, it was just off the charts. And this is somebody, you know, in that, you know, that position of not caring about either team. I don't like the Ravens. I don't like the Raiders. But I was captivated. I could not stop watching.
There's okay. One more cut, too.
Oh, is this another one from John Gruden?
From Gruden, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you what, man. This team gave 125%. Not just 110%. 125% with the extra quarter. Derek Carr, field general. And I love the new hair, man. That's some good-looking stuff right there. You can join me and Mark at the barber anytime. Max Crosby, dominating the opposing line. Darren Waller. Unbelievable, man. I feel like we had to win this game twice.
That was Frank Caliendo, of course, doing John. Yeah, that was great. That was kind of alarming, watching Mark Davis up in the luxury suite. What a dork! What a dork!
Jared says it with more disdain.
What is with... You know, it's certain... It's like, so the level of money goes where... When you're very rich, you dress, you know, impeccable.
Uh-huh.
You get like $1,000 haircuts.
Uh-huh.
But then when you're wealthy,
uh-huh,
when you're above even being rich,
uh-huh, then you're eclectic.
You yeah, okay.
And you wear sweatsuits.
you're eclectic or eccentric, or you
what a dork.
A bunch of dorks. These guys.
Completely.
You see a lot of NBA and NFL owners. They become rich because they cut their own hair?
Right.
Mark Zuckerberg only wears basketball shorts, and that's how he saves his money.
That's true.
Mark Cuban dresses like a slob always.
Steve Jobs only wore black turtlenecks, jeans, and white New Balance shoes.
Bill Gates hasn't had a suit that fit him in 40 years of being famous and rich.
Something to be learned. I would love to, I would love to see a 30 for 30 Mark Davis going to get a haircut.
Oh my God!
I don't know if anybody wants to claim that on their resume.
Seriously, somebody in his inner circle must have at one point in time, and I shouldn't be one to talk, right? But at some point in time, somebody in his inner circle should have said, "Dude, really, man, let's get you a different style. Yeah. You can afford it."
You look like you're from Dumb and Dumber, but this isn't funny.
Right. This is right. Exactly. You are the face of an NFL franchise. You are the son of the legendary Al Davis, who was as cool as they came.
You look like you have a walnut shell on your head.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Is Mark Davis going to become a regular topic of Target now?
He should. What a dork.
You're right. I don't get it. I just don't get it how, in general, when people have terrible haircuts, or even worse to me, when they have terrible hair pieces.
Jarrett, what? Are you really the one to talk about a terrible
haircut? Okay, I know, but everyone told me all the time how terrible it looked.
That is true.
Yet you kept it.
Yeah.
And yet you kept it.
So maybe you and Mark Davis are kindred spirits.
But
he's getting the same advice and is just saying
there's
no.
There's a difference between Jarrett letting his hair grow to the point of absurdity and to the point of utter fixation and obsession on his behalf, when he couldn't keep his hands out of his hair, right?
Yes.
He's back there scratching it.
Yes.
That's why you're rubbing your eyes all the time, Jared. All your schmutz from your hair is still in the air behind you.
I'm keeping this door closed.
But hey. Right, yes, you should. But the thing with, I can respect not cutting your hair, because I've been that guy.
It was also
cutting your hair like that?
True, yeah. But it was also a pandemic. I wasn't doing it just for...
Yeah.
Maybe that's Mark Davis's excuse, too.
Yeah. 40-year pandemic.
He might be, like, the president of the What a Dork Club, but
yeah.
He is also, did you see the pictures of the $14 million mansion he's building in Las Vegas?
No, I have not.
That looks a lot like the stadium.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of black glass on this house.
It is a cool football stadium, and there was a good vibe in there last night.
There's a picture of the mansion, or the renderings of the mansion.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a little audacious.
A little bit.
But again, he's got all that haircut money saved up. Why not put it into the house?
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So that's a good win for the Raiders, though, last night.
Really good win. And by the way, breaking news. Watching Lamar Jackson when he breaks the pocket, Kyler Murray is a tremendous runner with the football. Lamar Jackson's on a different level.
Yeah, because Lamar Jackson is like a running back.
It's different. Lamar Jackson's so smooth when he runs. It's like before you know it, he's won 20 yards. Kyler Murray makes, you know, the whoop, 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 whoop.
Right,
whoop.
Yeah, right, exactly. You can almost see, right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly true. So that's, if you're a Ravens fan, that's a tough loss. If you're a Raiders fan, that's a really good game. If you're a football fan, you're like, how in the world do football coaches spend all these hours on the job and lose track of their place kicker on the sideline? How does that happen? If you didn't see the end of the game, the Raiders thought they had the game won. Then they put the ball inside the 1 yard line. Derek Carr gets intercepted. Now the Ravens have momentum. The Ravens turn it over. The Raiders are going to kick a field goal on second down, and they can't find their kicker. And because they can't find their kicker, they take a delay of the game penalty. Now, it all worked out well. Derek Carr threw a beautiful touchdown pass afterwards, but the lunacy of this. So it isn't just Cliff Kingsbury, is my point.
I said to my fiance last night, it is nice to watch incompetent football that doesn't emotionally impact me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I'm
great.
Used to that.
Yeah. That's a very, very good point.
So think about that. Think about that in the context of being us. In week one, we had no less of a coach than Mike Vrabel complimenting the Cardinals head coaching staff. Right? Because generally it's the other way around. And then we watched that debacle last night. Now, and John Gruden got off the hook with it. But
I loved every minute of it.
Could you imagine if they would have thrown another interception and lost that game or tied that game because they couldn't find their kicker?
Oh, that would have been yeah. One for the ages. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, big change coming in the Pac-12. At USC, we'll get into that and more college football news next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata Mornings on 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Seemed like a years-long plot line in Los Angeles. Because it was a years-long plot line in Los Angeles. How does Clay Helton still have the job as the head coach of the USC Trojans? Well, that tenure came to an end yesterday as USC finally pulled the plug on Clay Helton's tenure after an embarrassing loss to Stanford. Stanford looked absolutely punchless in their opening game against Kansas State. Mm-hmm. Couldn't move the ball. They scored 7 points. There was no offense to speak of. They lit up USC for 42 points. They beat them by 2 touchdowns in Los Angeles. And finally, enough was enough. Clay Helton is out. And the move was made only 2 games in, according to USC leadership, Bick, in attempts to salvage this season.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is possible because you're still going out there with the same players that got dominated
exactly.
by Stanford.
And you're not gonna change everything you've installed up to this point.
No.
You're not gonna like come in and change your methodology of what you're doing.
So this obviously has ramifications here in the Valley for ASU. Obviously has ramifications across town in Los Angeles for UCLA, who's off to a good start. You know, we'll see if USC can rebound. Now where it gets scary is what the future holds for the Trojans, because it is still an attractive job. They can pay a lot of money as a private school. You know, you don't have all those reports of coach salaries and things like that. But, you know, this has been coming for quite a long time. Here was the ESPN college football reporter Adam Rittenberg.
Look at the schedule upcoming. USC has Washington State on the road, Oregon at home, Colorado on the road. Those are three games that the Trojans should win. So, in essence, if Mike Bone felt, which he did, that this thing wasn't going to get turned around, he almost didn't give Clay Helton that chance to get up some wins before the schedule turned tougher. And you're the first school into the market to try to get a new head coach.
Now, so here's what I think this was, because this is not a move to save the season, if you will, because you've got the same players. You're going to have a different voice. It'll have a little bit of effect, I guess. But I think what USC realized, and they've known for a while, is that this guy is not going to restore USC to a national power. Not the way Pete Carroll did. The job has always been too big for him. He would have never been hired as USC head coach had it not been for the fact that he was sitting there when Steve Sarkisian abruptly had to leave the program. Okay. And so the fact that USC held on to him as long as they did, I think they realized we need to fire this guy. And what happens if he has a really good season? Because the players love him. He's got some David Johnson in him where every, oh, what a great guy. You couldn't get through one paragraph of a story about Clay Helton's firing without people talking what a great guy he was. True. Okay, so this is all about USC finally realizing we're not getting there with this guy. And this game right here against Stanford is proof, and we're just firing him right now. Now, the big question becomes, does it have ramifications here in the Valley? Well, yeah, duh. This has been a boon for for ASU football to have a USC program that's just kind of treading water, right? I mean, this team should be in the college football playoff every year.
At least in the discussion.
It should be Ohio State, Alabama.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, but also, you know, in that period of time, a potential boon has been a missed opportunity for a lot of teams in the South who haven't been able to take advantage of a very mediocre USC program.
That's right. And so in the meantime, so ASU has created something, and we've all wondered, okay, how stable is what ASU created given these NCAA investigations? And what is the future going to be? Cliff Kingsbury might have still been on that staff. Cliff Kingsbury might have been named the head coach of USC today.
Isn't that something?
That's true.
Had he not, he was hired to be the offensive coordinator at USC before, and he was on the job about 19 minutes before the Cardinals said, no, you know what? Why don't you fail all the way up to the top? I'm sorry. That's the truth. I'm not trying to be harsh.
Although the guy who ended up taking that job didn't get named the interim either.
Yeah.
That is true.
And if Clay Helton were fired, Cliff probably would have been fired too, right?
Right. And so instead, Cliff is coming off a raucous week one victory, and he's got some momentum behind him for the first time in ages. All right?
That's true.
So now, is this Urban Meyer thing really possible?
Maybe. Here's Adam Rittenberg from ESPN on some possible candidates.
Several names you hear a lot about. Penn State head coach James Franklin, who's obviously in a Tier 1 job already, but might want to change. And being in L.A., being able to recruit on the West Coast, he's already won a Big Ten championship. Mike Bone wants to compete for conference championships and national championships, so he's a name you'll hear. Same with Luke Fickell, the head coach at Cincinnati, who Mike Bone, the athletic director, hired when he was at Cincinnati. You'll hear Matt Campbell from Iowa State, former Washington head coach Chris Peterson. Maybe he wants to get back in the game. Minnesota head coach P.J. Fleck. What if USC makes a run at Oregon head coach Mario Cristobal, who's won each of the last two Pac-12 championships and has recruited extremely well on the West Coast?
A name not mentioned there is the one that you mentioned, Urban Meyer, longtime college coach in the NFL for his first year. One week in, things did not go well for the Jacksonville Jaguars in week one. I don't know what Urban Meyer's interest is. We had Urban Meyer on the show a couple of years ago when he had a role with the Fiesta Bowl and sat down, and he didn't act like he missed coaching all that much, especially at the college level. It took its toll on him. I don't know if he would be interested in this job, but that could be a complete game changer. If he gets if he gets recharged to coach in college and then has the resources and geography of USC, then yeah, no more boon for the Pac-12 South.
No. Now, shortly before
years old too.
Shortly before Clay Helton got fired, shortly before the news broke yesterday, there was a post from College Football Reddit that claimed, according to a source, that Urban Meyer just isn't feeling it, that he might be tapping out in Jacksonville. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. That would be, you talk about cowardice, to go in and go one game in, go, I'm not going to win the way I'm used to.
I gave this my best shot. And I just
gave it everything I had.
Just didn't work out.
I gave it all I had.
I'm going to take some time to focus on my family. That time will be a duration of about 16 hours
before
I fly to Los Angeles.
Before I relocate to Southern California.
But here's something to consider for USC, too. At the beginning of the year, people pointed out, all right, you miss, as a Pac-12 South school, you miss two North schools every year. The two North schools they're missing are Washington and Oregon. Now, Washington, turns out, is just a smoldering dumpster fire of a football team. Mm-hmm. But Oregon's now a top five team, and USC doesn't have to play them.
I know.
Until the potential championship game.
What are you saying, Jarrett? You think they get this back on track? They fired their coach after two games.
No, I'm just saying
no.
That like
no.
Yeah. This should be
between UCLA and ASU. Who's going to play Oregon? That's the way this should break.
If you think about like okay, so Alabama perennial dominance, but there was a time pre Nick Saban where they weren't, and that was when other schools like Nick Saban's LSU and Steve Spurrier's Florida took advantage and became national powers. During the post Pete Carroll era, Oregon has flirted with being an elite program, but otherwise the rest of the Pac-12 has not taken advantage of this.
This is true.
It hasn't risen up against around it.
So this is going to be fascinating to see if Urban Meyer detaches himself from Jacksonville and then ends up in Southern California. I mean, he'll deny it all day long. Nick Saban once, I'm not going to be the Alabama head coach. Yeah, okay, now you got two statues outside the stadium. What a joke.
Yeah. USC does take on Washington State Saturday in Pullman. See if they can get their program back on track.
Yeah, that's always a good time to do it, too. That's giving a layup to the new guy. You know what I mean? It's the old baseball adage, always call a team meeting right before the AC or staff is throwing a game.
Yeah.
It'll make it seem like that team meeting led to this revival. Yeah. I don't know. To me, I would be worried about who USC is going to land on this time and if they get it right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big if because they haven't got it right in a while. Coming up next, Cardinals big win over the Titans in week one. What does it mean for their spot and power rankings around the country? We'll give you a hint next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.